The political problem, this is Alf Regnery now. As government continues to grow, liberty is the victim. Conservatives continue to talk, perhaps nostalgically, about limited government. But government is not limited anymore and is unlikely to become so in our lifetimes. I have been asked to talk about the political aspects of the crisis, and such a talk could take many turns, but I want to spend my few minutes on the question of the almost impossible task of undoing what liberals and their willing Republican accomplices have already done, and the implications of that for our dream and quest for limited government. The problem that we face burgeoned in the 1960s when government benefits, aid, and other largesse, that's a great word, changed from a system that lent assistance to the poor, the sick, and the disabled, to a system through which certain new groups could command government support as a matter of right and as compensation for past injustices. Government began to define groups of recipients of its aid as underprivileged and members of the liberal elite, many of whom were the real beneficiaries, became responsible for them. The system then spread from poor people to a whole raft of other defined groups who were either in need of government help, farmers, immigrants, old people, and then on to interest groups, such as those concerned about the environment, civil rights, labor unions, health care, and hundreds of others. In the later years of the Johnson administration, the system took yet another turn with transformation from thinking of that getting government assistance as simply recipients and turning them into constituents who were considered stakeholders in the programs and the agencies that determined them. These constituent stakeholder programs included welfare, legal services for the poor, feminist goals, affirmative action, and expansion of civil rights laws, abortion rights, environmental activism, and nuclear disarmament. With grants and contracts from the federal government, advocacy, activist, and litigation groups such as the Environmental Defense Fund, the Women's Law Forum, and the Mexican-American Legal Defense and Education Fund, to name a few, were created to lobby Congress and the regulatory bodies that implemented the programs, to create public pressure, and to bring lawsuits against the government, to seek broader interpretations of the laws, and to push the envelope way to the left of the wishes of Congress and state legislatures. Private foundations such as Ford, Carnegie, MacArthur, and many others spent hundreds of millions of dollars as well and invented the now familiar liberal phenomenon of self-appointed, well-financed advocacy groups promoting complaints against the taxpayers and seeking expanded benefits or compensation on behalf of their constituents. Add to this the fact that many of these programs became entitlements instead of discretionary programs. 59% of the budget in 2010, up from 36% in 1970. And virtually complete control of government was no longer in the hands of Congress and the taxpayer, the payers, but the payees. But the problem extends way beyond entitlements. Where there was once a competitive system between the government and those enjoying its largesse, we have now been reduced to a system without competition or confrontation. Those getting government money mostly lobby Congress, sue the government, and undertake activist ventures, all paid for by the government. Hundreds of millions of dollars are doled out by the likes of the Labor Department to union interests, by the EPA, the Interior Department, and the Corps of Engineers to environmental groups, by Health and Human Services to its constituent groups, and so on, ad nauseum. Congress, as a result, will not stop what they have created. It is not a problem of liberal versus conservative, nor is it a problem of Democrat versus Republican. What went on in the Republican-controlled Congress and what went on in the Bush administration may have been marginally less perverse than what is happening now, but not much. Even as Republicans talk about repealing the health care legislation, immediately some start to backslide no doubt as they are buttonholed by the interest groups and the press who would criticize them for doing so. Said Texan John Cornyn the other day, he would make an exception from repeal of the non-controversial stuff, such as the ban on pre-existing conditions, which is, of course, exactly what necessitates the controversial stuff, such as the individual mandate. Most GOP politicians campaign for reducing government, canceling spending programs, and shuttering government agencies, overturning Roe v. Wade and the rest of what conservatives advocate. But once elected and confronted by their donors and the reality of political Washington, they back down and join the status quo and add a few programs and even entitlements of their own. Imagine how many dollars are included in the recently enacted health care legislation to perpetuate the health care legislation. My guess, the number is unfathomable and is already being doled out to the Obama administration's favorite groups, who are probably already hired lobbyists, PR firms, and the rest. As George Will pointed out recently, the bill includes the following, quote, "The Secretary of Health and Human Services, in awarding grants and contracts under this section, shall give preferences to entities that have a demonstrated record of training individuals who are from underrepresented minority groups or disadvantaged backgrounds." We all know what that means. Attorneys on both sides of the lawsuits, congressional staffers writing the spending bills and the lobbyists urging them on, and agency bureaucrats administering the programs and writing the regulations on the one hand, and the activists interested in expanding programs on the other, are often more than not on the same side, come from the same public interest law firms or pressure groups, and are part of the revolving door of government. The country faces a fundamental disconnect between the services these constituent groups expect the government to provide and the tax revenues that people are willing to send to the government to finance those services. That disconnect exists even among conservative members of Congress who will talk about limited government in the abstract but refuse to do anything to programs that affect their constituents. Even Jesse Helms, perhaps the most conservative member of the Senate in his own day, used to say that he was an unreconstructed hawk on every kind of government spending until it came to the tobacco subsidy, which he was all for. Sure, he qualified that and made the point that otherwise North Carolinians would find somebody else to send to the Senate, but that is the point. Multiply what he did and more by 535 members of Congress, all of whom are going to be easier marks than old Jesse, and you see the problem. It is fine to talk about limited government, and we should continue to do so, but I submit that only an economic disaster of tsunami proportions, which may in fact be on the way, will force politicians to address the system. Thank you.